Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's Tony Pimico.
And we'll be joining, or Tom will be joining us any minute now, so I could compass. Just probably waiting to hear us on the line. And we also have a rescheduled interview with Duke Rufus tonight. He's been busy, he's been sick, but finally we got him for the time slot. Hopefully all goes well there.
We got a lot to talk about this week. Ton of news. A lot of injuries in boxing.
Fights getting called off and everything.
Yeah.
Jonathan Banks was just in the news last night. Broke his thumb, so his next fight is off. It was a broken rib we were talking about last week. Canceled the fight.
Also heard some news that Floyd Mayweather now might be fighting Devin Alexander. That's a very, in my opinion, fight.
Uh-huh. So what's going on with Robert Guerrero? Is he not fighting him or what?
Well, the last I heard, and I always quickly posted online, and you know, the person that posted it, the person the link, but the person was a admitted kind of Mayweather fan, so they were kind of trashing Guerrero on this. Guerrero, requested $4 million for the fight. They offered $2.5 million. And the last I heard was, he rejected it, so they were possibly going to Devin Alexander. Now, it's interesting, but could this be like a marketing ploy? There's been situations in the past where Floyd opponents have, rejected something, then it turned around and it happened. And so I'm not 100% sure, but that's the last I heard, which was as of today. The choice from Devin Alexander, like I said, obviously a very underwhelming decision there. Devin's obviously he's a championship caliber fighter. I mean, there's no question of that. But in the biggest fight of his career, he underperformed against Timothy Bradley. And the fight was just, it wasn't exciting. And then it was when he was behind, they clashed heads, and then Alexander basically quit. Went to the decision knowing he was behind. So basically he gave up on the fight without basically getting a TKO loss. He basically said, I'm done, and went to the decision where he knew he was behind. His last fight was against Randall Bailey. And it was not a good fight. Bailey had the big knockout win over Mike Jones, but everybody seemed to forget in that fight that for the first, 10.5, or the first 9.5 rounds, or actually I should say the first 9 rounds, 2 minutes and 55 seconds, the fight was pretty much terrible. And then Bailey dropped Jones with a right hand in the middle of the 11th round, and Jones was taking it to him until Bailey caught him with an uppercut. But Alexander, he basically got in there with Randall Bailey, and he just played keep away, won a decision. So I can't see that drawing a lot of pay-per-view buys. I mean, I'm a diehard boxing fan, and I heard that, I'm like, I have no interest in watching that fight. And generally, the guy with Floyd Mayweather, you only get him once or twice a year if you're lucky. And the situation's like, you're not going to see the guy at the end of the year. I'd say, well, I guess I'll pass on this one. If it does get through on May 5th, as it's discussed, would be the Chiefs undercard fight, which is going to be Canelo Alvarez. And some of the opponents are talking about setting him up with. I heard the name James Kirkland in there. It'd be a very good fight. The gentleman that Kirkland beat, Alfredo Angulo, wants. Both guys here that are both very aggressive fighters.
Hello? All right. I think we were talking about boxing before we got kind of off there.
I don't know where you left off. I think you were talking about Canelo and Alvarez, Tony.
Yeah, I was saying, they were talking about the possible fight card coming up, and, they're talking about who Alvarez would fight on the card. He'd be the only person, the only fight to potentially make it interesting. You have Alvarez. The name I heard was possibly James Kirkland. Very exciting fighter. Doesn't have the best chin in the world, which should turn it into a shootout. Also, they mentioned the guy that Kirkland had beat, Alfredo Angulo. Another intriguing possibility because he has a pretty good chin and he hits pretty damn hard. And then also, we have to always consider the fact that if Guerrero doesn't get to fight with Mayweather, that he might, take a fight with Alvarez. But, it's all speculation right now until the contracts get signed.
All right. Well, we're supposed to have Duke Rivers on at 8:30, but due to technical difficulties, I still have to connect Tom again and then add his number to the list so we can get him on. So, what else we got to boxing related news? Did you see the Friday night fights last week? What was going on there?
No, I did not get to see Friday Night Fights last week. I was away pretty much all day on Friday, long day. Right after I got off the air with you guys, I headed down to my friend's house, and from there we hung out for a few hours. Then we went down to the Wells Fargo Center, got there at 4 a.m., started tailgating a little bit, and then went inside and watched a bunch of people gorge on wings. Philadelphia fighter Dave Brunelli, he made it into the top five out of about 25 to 30 contestants, and in the top five he had 220 wings, and you could tell he was starting to maybe a little bit in that second session. He could do a foot session, a 14 minute session, sprint off into the top five. He was starting to labor a little bit in that second 14-minute session, and about 2 minutes in, about 30 seconds into the 2-minute sprint, he threw off. But still, it was good of the camera. From there, I came home, and then it was off to my friend's birthday party. So I really didn't have a whole lot of time to do anything over the weekend. Then by Saturday, I was in bed for literally 3 days, from Saturday to almost Monday. Just for being sick and not feeling well.
You came down with the sickness?
What?
You hit the flu? What do you got? You don't know?
I think it was just a cold. A little bit of advice. My one friend who I was hanging out with, he had been sick the week before, and he and I were still going to the gym together, and then it was his house that I stayed over. So, wouldn't be surprised full of germs and everything. I probably got it from him. And then, in the course of 36 hours, I think I slept all of, three of them.
Well, we do have Tom. Tom's live now.
Good evening, gentlemen. All right.
We do have a lot of UFC to talk about, of course, between the Ultimate Fighter, the knockout of the season already decided, pretty much.
Yes.
obviously, another knockout, big knockout of heavyweight proportions on the UFC card this last weekend. Antonio Bigfoot Silva took out Overeem in a very surprise finish. A lot to talk about there. We did Rufus on eventually here. I'm trying to get his number set up. But we will discuss that knockout. It was kind of a little rope-a-dope action on Silva's part. He kind of took the first part of the fight off, and then very weird. Once he started striking and connecting with Overeem sort of gave him a look to end, I think it was the second round. And he just gave him this look like, how dare you try to punch me in the the fight was arranged or something, and then he comes out for the third round, and lo and behold, he can't have a striking department. He got hit with a couple good right hands and went down like a lump of coal. So it was a shocking finish there, 25 seconds into the third round.
And, there's that old cliche about those big muscles need fed. And considering this whole thing, you kind of wonder how he would have done had he got the shot against Kane. But having said that, now, has he thrown that division into turmoil or what? There's every rumor about signing Josh Barnett. I mean, it's just the rumor mill's been out of control with that. But what a night of upsets. I mean, stuff that, if not shocking, at least unpredictable. Because my call on the Damian Maia fight was, I think Maia, if Maia's going to win, I see a submission in the first round. And aside from that, Fitch will grind him out. And how wrong that was. Maia was unanimous decision by all three judges, 30-27. So it looks like Maia has gone back to his jiu-jitsu roots, which he should have been sticking with all that time. You know, so good for him. And then in another one that I thought was a bit surprising was Little Nog and Rashad.
Yeah, that was pretty much a toss-up as to who was going to win that fight. And, you know, it just was probably the least entertaining fight of the night.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the question has to be said. There was even a thread on the Underground about when guys go to the Black Zillions, it seems like not a lot of good comes out of it. And I don't know if the question is, has Rashad really starting on the downside? Because Little Nog's been around a long time. I mean, on paper, it was Rashad's fight to win. And I don't know if there's any mental effects from the John Jones fight from Rashad. I mean, no one knows, but I think he's really going to have to dig deep now and try to turn this around. Not saying he can't do it, but or maybe Little Nog's really put things together at this stage of his career, but we'll have to see in the next fights.
I don't know, it reminded me of bad Chad Dawson, the way he was jabbing so much, and not for effect, just for basically to gauge his punches, and he wasn't really doing much after the jab. He wasn't following it up, he didn't really seem like he wanted to fight. It seemed like he was just so cautious the whole time that he was more afraid to lose than he was wanting to win. Badly enough. I was very confused by that approach, but it is what it is, you know. And I think he just forgot what got him to that point. You know, he used to have a much more well-rounded game, and in this fight, he just seemed to be fighting safe, basically. Come into this safest fight and, you know, still score points. And I don't know whether that's because he really wants that title shot again or what the story is there. But I think Dana White actually came out and publicly criticized him for his approach in that fight.
Yeah. And see, that's what makes me wonder mentally. You know, I've got to ask those mental questions as to just where he's at, what was going through his head.
Well, here's Duke Rufus. We're going to connect to him. I actually did make it out to Vegas. I know that they were talking about him on the broadcast. His coaching there. I think he had. I forget who it was, but he's been a busy guy. Bellator and the U.S.
Hello.
Hello, Duke.
Yes.
Hey, this is Rebel Rouse and Rich Bergeron with Fight News Unlimited. We're also on the line with Tony Zanale and Psychic Tom Pat.
Good evening. Please excuse me. I'm multitasking while we're talking. We're in the middle of a blizzard, and I'm shoveling as we speak, if that's cool with you guys.
That's fine. Actually, we're about to get the blizzard that you're getting now, I think. So.
Getting my late evening workout in, and I'm a little sick, so please excuse me.
Yeah, we heard about that last week, so you must have the flu. It's been going on this long.
I got an upper respiratory and sinus infection. I just had 3 weeks of traveling with fights, and just traveling sometimes wears me down, you know, there's no place like home.
Right.
But that's sacrifice you gotta, that's what it takes to win sometimes.
Right. Well, tell us about that. There was the week we were trying to get you on, I think you had Ben Askren and Bellator first, and then you had a couple guys in the UFC fight that weekend. Tell us about your stable there and running around the country with these guys.
Well, it was, that week was real big. We had Ben Askren really tear it up in his defense of his Bellator title. I was really proud of Ben. He really came out there and added on to his world-class wrestling. He's really working hard, and that's something we worked on, was getting him to strike better on the ground. I mean, you can take anybody down at will. So he wanted to work on his finishes. And, oh, boy, did he finish Carl Armistead. Carl talked a lot of mess before the fight. So, I'm sorry, can I, hello?
Yep, we're back. I mean, we just lost you for a second there.
Okay, cool. But obviously, we move on to UFC and Fox. We had Alan Belt, Anthony Pettis, Eric Koch, and Pascal Krauss fought out there. Pascal was on the undercard. He did fantastic. He highlighted his new move, the flying Panzer, which is his Superman uppercut that he created in the gym.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was fun stuff, you know. Pascal has got a bright future. He's relocated to Milwaukee. He's one of the only two of the German fighters in the UFC. So I think he's going to become the face of German UFC, definitely.
So obviously, you had a pretty stellar. What first got you into fighting?
Say again? I'm sorry, I have a bad connection.
You had a pretty good fight career yourself. What got you interested in fighting in the first place?
Well, I started martial arts with my family when I was 4 years old. I competed in my first martial arts tournament when I was six. And then my dad and my family, I think I saw Benny the Jetter Kiedis fight when I was 5 years old in Milwaukee. And our family really got into the old school TK kickboxing, and the rest is just kind of history. My older brother is a 6-time world kickboxing champion, and I followed in the footsteps of my family. My dad was a fight promoter, trained us, and it's just kind of been a progression that I followed my whole family in.
And what did you enjoy most when you were fighting? What is it about?
Winning. No one likes losing, but all winning. Actually, what I miss most is having a goal to train for, setting up a goal. It's to be driven. I have done some, I'm blue belt in jiu-jitsu. I've done some tournaments and won, but it still hasn't given me the same satisfaction of training for a fight. But it holds me over for now. But when you put your name on a dotted line and it's time to focus, and it's you versus the guy, there's no better feeling than that modeling mouth doing when you versus him, and all the insecurities leading up to it in training camp. And am I outwork? Am I going to beat him? Am I going to destroy him? Is he going to destroy me? I'm sick like that. I really enjoyed that part of fighting, the struggle.
Right. Now, how did you end up with such a huge stable of big-name fighters?
I was training a lot of kickboxers from about 2004. I've had a lot of really good kickboxers over the years, but they've had to stop doing the sport because they couldn't maintain a real living doing it. So I had great fighters for a long time, about 2004, 2005. A lot of my students wanted to make the transition into MMA. So therefore, you know, I love my students like my children. I started the progression to MMA, and here we are today. It's just, you know, the guys can make it. We've got Bronx boys, and we've had, you know, Ben Askren's originally from Wisconsin. But then we also have guys that relocated to us or who visit me, like Alan Beltran, Mayor Pope moved to Milwaukee, you know, Pascal Krauss. So it's cool. And then, I don't know, I think one of the guys that is attracted to my mindset, not only did coaching, I think my approach to training pretty hard, you know, my father's dad is from Greece. He's a sergeant major, World War II to Vietnam. So I think that's a huge influence in my life. Very proud of my Greek heritage. Spartan, we train like one. We got our academy, our hard nose, but being from Wisconsin as well, I am Greece. One of my icons and role models is for me is that style mindset of winning and hard work. I mean, it's fighting's different than any other sport. If you're good at fighting, you're not doing well. You've got to be great to do well in this business, and that's kind of where Anthony Pettis's mindset and Ben Askren are right now. They want to be the best in the sport and decide from their last performance.
Right. Well, I'm not sure who this is, but I think we have a caller trying to get in to ask a question, I think. Hello?
No, I'm just listening in, buddy.
Oh, okay. Well, you don't have to call the show to listen in. You can go to the base.
I'm on the road. That's a...
Well, I guess we have a caller on hold trying to just listen in. That's interesting. But anyway... Tom, you want to get a word in as well?
Yes, sir. Duke, first off, congratulations on the job you did with the NAAFS, because I'm from the Cleveland area, and I really appreciated your insights on there. It's just great commentary.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah,
oh,
you just
you really
broke things down good, and we hope to see you back there someday. But, I mean, I know you got a full plate, but we'd really like to see you back on. But supposedly, in the considering the Pettis fight, how could you have had a more convincing victory, and how could you deny him a title shot? Now, I've been hearing rumors. Has anything been signed on that yet?
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Drop out for a second.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of a blizzard here, so I'm getting a bad signal. I'm sorry. How, can you repeat your question one more time?
Yeah, I was just saying, Duke, with the outstanding job that Anthony Pettis did, I mean, just taking apart a very tough fighter. I mean, I'd never seen Cowboy humbled like that and beaten so quick. So there's lots of talk about an impending title shot for Anthony, and I don't see how he could be denied, but I guess my question is, I know it's in the rumor stage now, or has anything concrete been presented to you about that?
Well, he told Dana the attacks after the fight he could beat Aldo, so Dana decided to put Aldo and Anthony Pettis together. Anthony's dropping the 145 August 3rd to fight Aldo. Anthony definitely wants to get back. This is Anthony's year of coming of age. He just turned 26 the day after his last fight, and he's in the champion mindset mode of he wants to go out there and beat legendary fighters and have legendary performances, and he just saw something. He's been wanting to fight Aldo for a while, but his teammate Eric Pope was in the running to fight him. but unfortunately Eric lost in Chicago, so he's come out of the title picture. So Anthony decided to, you know, call it's actually not out of disrespect, but more respect. He wants to test his skills and go out there and make a name for himself. He's there to beat the best, to be the best. He wants to put himself up there with Anderson Silva from the GSP of our industry. So he wants to take on Aldo, and then whatever the smoke clears with Henderson and Melendez, hopefully it's to go beat him again even more convincingly.
Yeah. So in other words, looking for the belt in two divisions. Well, how do you see his power at 145? Because I think he'll be a little quicker. But do you think he'll still have his power?
Well, he doesn't cut a lot of weight. You know, that's the last two fights we had. He didn't even go to the sauna. We did a light workout in the morning, and he actually ate quite well up to the weigh-in. So he's kind of a tweener between the two weight classes. And when he's very motivated and able to stay in the gym and have the type of motivation like an Aldo, like a Henderson, he's unstoppable. He's a big stakes player, so he likes that. He's, you know, we're already game planning for Aldo fighting. You know, it's 6 months from now, but I think he's going to do great at the weight. Although, sorry, not being arrogant, I've been doing kickboxing stand-up since I was 4 years old. I've been blessed to have trained in Thailand, Japan, Holland, France, all over the place, just some of the best masters on the planet. So when Anthony fought Cerrone, I was like, wow, this is a really easy fight. And everyone's like, what? I'm like, yeah, this is easy for me. This is exactly what I do. You know, with respect to Dom, he's really good kickboxer, but people forget the royalty of people that I've been able to train with and the knowledge that I have. And then you take the knowledge with the acrobatic, athletic, and skill and tenacity of Anthony Pettis, you know, there you have an easy fight for us.
Yeah, I mean, I could understand how people would be shocked if they heard that, but Anthony made it look easy. He definitely made it look easy.
I mean, just from the striking standpoint, I see different things than most people. The way people look at jiu-jitsu and small little details, I don't look at striking from a tenacity or from who's the toughest guy. I expose technical deficiencies. That's what I did when Anthony fought Ben Henderson. It was a very easy fight for me to do a game plan. It didn't help, though, too. It's not fair. My brother trained Ben for a while, and I know my brother's style, so it was really easy for me to do a game plan. And getting back to the Henderson fight, I don't think Henderson is in a hurry to fight Anthony because he had his number. If you play the fight again, in the fifth round, Anthony gets the Ali shuffle and Ben for.
Yeah, very, very good point. Well, exactly. I mean, I think just with the package you've put together, and you know, I've been a fan of you and your brother for a long time back in the K1 days, you know. But just the package you put together, I think he has every chance of being a two division belt holder. I mean, just with the talent, the technique, and I like what you said, Duke, about how, you know, you try to really work on the technique because there's an old boxing cliche that you give me two tough guys, but the guy who's a little smarter and a little more technical is a lot tougher. And that's so true.
Definitely. That's it. And for career longevity, I mean, Anthony fought 4 minutes at last place. And that's the way I would like his fights to be. I'm trying to make him where he gets less cage work like an Anderson Silva. So, and the other thing, I have a few secret weapons, you know. NBA from Daniel Marias, our jiu-jitsu coaches, Daniel actually beat Marcelo Garcia twice. He's the guy who formulated the game plan. Alan Belcher beat Paulo Harris, so he's a genius on the ground.
Now, speaking of the Bellator situation there, you know, you have guys in different leagues, a lot of guys in the UFC and some guys over in Bellator, obviously. What's that like dealing with the competing organizations? Is that ever a problem, or do you ever run?
Not for me. I'm really friendly with the UFC. Just, I think they're the biggest and the best, but I work with everybody because they provide opportunities for everybody. I mean, I've got a few guys in the World Series of Fighting. I got a few guys in Muay Thai. I don't get caught up in the politics of that stuff. They all treat me really good and really professional, so I have no complaints. I think the more the better. I think it's a great time in combat sports.
Yeah, definitely. I know that they're about to get into a real duel with these the channel situation there with Spike TV and Randy Couture going to approach this new reality show for Bellator. Do you know anything about that show? Have you caught up with that at all?
One of my athletes was offered an opportunity to be on the show, but he passed on it. He just didn't think it was going to be a good format for him to be on a reality show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's cool exposure, but on one of the shows isn't for everybody. Some guys perform better in training environment. I think, like, this season, the Ultimate Fighter's really great, the way they set it up. But on one of those shows and perform, it takes a very resilient show to deal with. Leaving with a bunch of dudes you're potentially going to fight, or, you know, some of the guys on there to create good entertainment. So it's a unique situation, and it's nice for everybody.
Yeah, actually, you know, I've interviewed a bunch of tough competitors over the years, and I seem to always get, when I ask them about what's the toughest thing, I always get the weight cutting so many times, so soon, you know, and that, you know, you have to prepare for so many fights in that tournament if you get to the finals. Seems to be
the
number one gripe.
Now, that was kind of one of the issues on my dad just chose not to participate. It just helped us. No.
Worst.
I think it's going to be good.
The worst was when they did the live one that one time, and these guys had 3 weeks and three fights going into the finals, and they just fought the week before, and they're fighting for a UFC contract the next week on a show. And I thought that was a real deal. I mean, they looked beat up going into the cage for that one. And usually when they tape the show, they had a long break before they had an opportunity to fight for a contract. So I'm glad they got rid of that format.
No, I mean, you know, our sport's so young, and you can't fault anyone. It's just, it's a work in progress. I mean, it's kind of like who knew that you shouldn't have the field goals in the end zone back in the day. Oh, wait, we can lose the field goal. It's just all running stuff. And math and hockey and football. You know, it's all part of the growing pains of the sport we love.
Now, what would you say is the most important thing that you do with a fighter to get him ready for a fight?
Is I make sure, I don't care what discipline they have put me in. I have trained boxers, kickboxers, MMA, Muay Thai, K1. Biggest thing is I try and duplicate the intensity of fight night in the gym. So when they get into a fight first time, they don't feel out of place when the guy brings it to them. Oh, wow, that guy hit me hard. Oh, wow, that guy's tense. I really try and get guys mentally prepared with a fight night. It's really easy for them. Mental. And just a lot of good technique. And my biggest thing is just trying. I can coach to beat a lot of the fighters I train, they don't get beat up on their feet at all. I really focus on the mentals and the fundamentals and defense. That's when you put in, you know, punches off the fence like Alan Belcher or Anthony Pettis or Anthony doing the pull that he's doing. And, you know, you can really do some fun stuff like that if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was just talking last week about a fight on Friday Night Fights where a guy is he only had his whole career and he still hasn't figured out how to keep his hands up. You know,
it's interesting. Even in boxing, you know, you watch you know, not put my boxing, one of the detail oriented as he used to be. So my older brother's managed by Sherman, and he also trained, and I had a lot of friends boxing, coaches, and Olympic coach. So I guess the training was small people focus. So his nickname for me is the sponge. Because I come into the gym and I try and sponge all the information up. I'm talking, you know, meticulously asking questions. Why do you do this, that? And I think that's kind of a myth between art and boxing.
Right. Now, what would you say has been your best moment in the sport of MMA so far?
So far, I'll be full champion for the returning Anthony in WBC. And as well, you know, Ben Askren, his recent, I'd say mostly recent victories, so, because there's a lot of people out there in this game against Tom or Donald. And just both, this is a big week, I mean, last week, I mean, especially to see Ben grow as a fighter. I mean, Ben is a hell of a guy. I mean, people just don't realize how good he is at wrestling. He's one of only two guys to win the Hodge Trophy in wrestling, with the Heisman Trophy of wrestling. And the guy's won 2,000 times in his life at wrestling. And his mind is so creative in the way he looks at wrestling, for MMA wrestling, for wrestling. We have a lot of fun together because I have a pretty creative mind for striking. So I have as well. Things that are contrary to old school jiu-jitsu. So it's fun that we kind of have this think tank of, I'd say, rogue or off the grid type of coaches who aren't necessarily teaching the normal breaking the rules.
Yeah, I noticed in his fight there in Bellator against the Emissary, he just seemed so professional out there. Like, you know, it was like a walk in the park for him. It was like an everyday thing. He didn't seem nervous at all. Didn't seem like he was even capable of making a mistake.
No, that is, and he's a cyborg. I mean, you know, in between the first and second round, he dislocated his toe on the mat. You can see him reach down. He popped his toe back into place himself.
Oh,
I think quite a squid from that. He did, you know, here's a funny story. Ben, one day, he gets back he looks like a hippie, a really no dude, but he's the toughest guy I know. You ask anyone in that gym, they'll tell you the toughest guy's Ben Askren. Just mentally tough. And he goes, hey, coach, you got a roll of tape? They go, yeah, what do you need it for? Oh, I compound fractured my finger in Russia. I need to keep the bone back in so it doesn't pop out of the skin again while I wrestle. matter of fact conversation.
Jeez.
You know, that, you know, he's just very driven. The kid didn't miss practice from high school to college for 8 years straight. 8 years, he never missed one wrestling practice. You know, it's that type of mindset they have in our academy. He rubs off on everyone else on our team.
He must be like out for you, right?
Say again?
He seems kind of like he's an assistant coach for you at times.
He runs the wrestling. Yeah. I mean, the guy is a genius at wrestling, but he's also really good at understanding what wrestling works and which stars.
Well, Duke, what really impressed me about Ben in his last fight was I heard the things that the opponent was saying about him. I mean, just some nasty below the belt. I mean, yeah, there's some trash talk involved in the sport, but I kind of feel the guy was crossed the line a bit. And I guess my question is, Ben seemed to fight so cool and controlled, so he must have really channeled that inner anger. You know,
if you know all wrestling, is, I mean, his whole wrestling career, everyone tried to break him. So, I mean, part of the psychology of wrestling, especially here in Wisconsin, it's very hard-nosed. I mean, everyone's trying to, you're taught from a young age to break the kid on the mat, then win by points. So, I mean, he's just used to that type of psychological warfare.
Yeah.
And Ben, one of the best at.
Well, yeah, and I'll tell you this much. He's really evolved. It's got to make you so proud because a couple years ago people were saying, well, he's one-note Johnny. All he can do is take him down and lay and pray him. Well, I'll tell you, what he put on 2 weeks ago was a good old-fashioned ass-whipping. And I could imagine his opponent was flying back to France wondering, geez, why did I make him that mad, you know? Yeah.
Still there, Duke? This is Duke. Yeah, we lost Duke.
Oh, boy.
Hold on.
Your call has been forwarded to an automated voice messaging system.
Battery.
Four.
Oh, we'll try to get it in a few minutes. We'll get him back. But, probably something to do with the blizzard.
Oh, and then, Rich, also, like you mentioned Friday night fights. And my comments on that were like, it's watching the young lions push out the old, you know? were you able to get...
I always do this. I know I saw the fight, but I just, for the life of me, I can't even remember who fought who.
Well, it was Castillo in the first one. And I caught just the tail end of that, but apparently he was ridiculously behind going into the last round, and his corner just said, okay, just box, keep it on cruise control. So maybe this is finally the end of him. And I can't remember who he fought now. But then in the main event, the co-main event was Corey Spinks.
Started. Did you see the locker room stuff with Bernard, whatever his name is, Bernardo? Yeah. I mean, he got psyched out in the locker room, I think, by the way he was talking. He's like, towards the tail end of his career, he's basically saying if he doesn't win here, you know, or it could be one last put for a title.
Yeah.
So I think he kind of went in there like, feeling like he was a huge underdog, and you know, basically it seemed like it's one of my favorite fighters, Carlos Molina. There, I mean, he just came out there and just put on another clinic, and it's another stepping stone for him. And even though Spinks is kind of a big name, I don't think he's ever really been the type of guy that puts fear in people's hearts when they have to fight him.
No.
So,
you've said multiple times on the show, the only knockout you'll ever see Corey Spinks deliver is when I'm usually on the couch passed out by the third round. He's going to more attack me.
He retired after the fight, too, so we don't have to see it again.
Thank God. Oh, yeah, you're all respectful of the guy, you know, anybody that climbs in the ring, you know, you got to give respect to. But I did not enjoy watching them. And Tom, I was talking about this maybe a little bit last week, but about 5 years ago, when I was first, I wasn't even co-host in the show yet. I was actually coming up on 6 years now. Boy, time flies. I wasn't even co-host in the show yet. I was just starting to write, you know, a little bit for Fight News Unlimited and doing some predictions and covering fights when I went to them. And I raced home to watch a fight card, And it was the co-main event was Kelly Pavlik and Edson Miranda, which was a barn burner.
Yeah.
And the main event
was
Jermaine Taylor. You know, Jermaine Taylor and Corey Spinks, which was horrible. You know, Taylor was Taylor, who was 160 pounds, wasn't pressing the action against a career welterweight with a 33% knockout percentage. And it was a horrible fight. And it actually prompted me to write an article like on fighters when they're on, I refuse to miss them. And when fighters, when they're on, I refuse to watch them. Mm-hmm. And
when they're off, you mean.
And thinking about it now, as sad as it is, guys on my can't-miss list are not just retired, but a few of them are no longer with us. A guy like Arturo Gatti's no longer with us. And yeah, this is when Manny Pacquiao was trying to break out. He was on that list. This was before his big fight over De La Hoya. You know, I had Paul the Punisher Williams is on there. He's unfortunately paralyzed right now. And then you had a few guys that were on that list, on my can't watch list, and one of the guys on there we just lost a few months ago was Hector Camacho Sr.
Uh-huh.
But there's just certain guys, like, when they came on, it was like, oh, please. Probably one of the worst fights I think I've ever seen in the history of me watching fights, and I only lasted to the third round. And it was a fighter I used to really like, was a guy by the name of Chris Byrd, heavyweight. Smallish heavyweight, pretty good skill, you know, he's a defensive first fighter. But, you know, you can enjoy watching if you're a boxing purist. And then he got knocked out by Ike Abayabuchi, and he became just a safety first fighter. And I'll never forget a fight that it was so aptly named. It was Chris Byrd versus a guy by the name of Darvell Touch of Sleep Williamson. And it was so bad. Because you had a southpaw and conventional fighter, and they were taking their lead hands and playing patty cake with them, to the point where by the second round, the referee was saying, guys, you have to start fighting. You have to start fighting. And I don't know how it got any more exciting. I know it didn't. But by the third round, I was done. I was out. And Chris Miller won the decision, and they were saying it was one of the most dreadful fights out there.
Well, but remember the good news. The good news, it was only 12 rounds. I remember sitting through 15 with Greg Page and Tony Tubbs, and they were doing that hand-slapping patty cake, and it went on for 15. Unbelievable. And unbelievable, yeah. I sat there and watched it for 15 rounds. That's about my IQ. Jeez.
Well, let me try to connect again with Duke here.
You're doing what? It's got to get better, right? It's got to get better.
Yeah.
I'm just going to try to connect that Duke again here.
Hello?
Hey, Duke.
Hey, how are you doing?
We lost you there for a minute.
Yeah, no worries. We're back.
All right. Getting back to our discussion there, do you get anybody that's new to the team that hasn't been talked a lot about yet, but should be?
Obviously, we're talking about Sergio Pettis a lot. He's a big talent, only 19 years old. But as well, I think another guy coming up, Rick Glenn, he's only 23. He's 12-2. He's fighting in the World Series of Fighting on May the 22nd. Very exciting fighter, a good finisher. I think he's only won two fights by decision, so he's really good at finishing fights. Just good talent, big 145er. They also just signed Kirk Kinzer, who was all Big Ten. He's 7-0, and he wrestled at the University of Indiana. So another great talent piece with the World Series of Fighting. Yeah, just a lot of young talent coming up this week. And I have about 15 fighters fighting in our amateur event here in Milwaukee. Just trying to groom all the young talent to give them coming together really cool.
Awesome. Yeah, we've actually had Sergio either on the show before or I've interviewed him personally for one of my podcasts. And he sounds like he's definitely a chip off the old block there with his brother and his cousin.
Yeah, no, he's definitely got a lot of potential. You know, he's just, once he matures, he's going to be a beast. You know, he's just turned 19. He's just, you know, taking his time, and no need to rush him. You know, but when he hits his stride, oh boy, it's going to be something else.
Now, what would you say you enjoy most about mixed martial arts as a sport?
I like the chaos of it, like striking and martial and striking and kickboxing. It's a little bit more formatted and the rules are tighter. Whereas in MMA, it's a little bit wilder, chaotic game, and it's fun. And I like the evolutions too. So new that you can start experimenting and adapting a lot more new techniques. And that's what I like about it. And, you know, I like the fact to, getting better at weaknesses and things like that. But, you know, sometimes it gets to a point with striking, I could do it without thinking. And I like to think about it, and mixed martial arts makes me think.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the evolution. And as a guy with so much experience, one main thing I have over the years, I started seeing it maybe a couple of years ago, but I've got the feeling that MMA is becoming way more of a striker's game than it used to be. You know, you don't have as many people booing when it goes to the ground anymore, but it seems like the fans love the stand-up so much that the fighters have kind of fed into it, and so many fighters just encourage the standing game and try to keep it standing, whether it's because they want the bonus money or, you know, for whatever reason. It just seems like it's moving into a striker's game to where, if you're a good striker, you can dominate.
Well, I'll explain a few different things about striking. It's very chaotic. I know I'll never take down Ben Askren, but he could knock me out. Our coach Daniel Myers, I'll never be able to submit him. Striking is a very chaotic sport, so a lot of athletes are drawn to striking because with that athletic advantage, you can hit quicker, faster before your opponent does, so it gives you a huge advantage. That's why wrestling and striking are a huge advantage right now in MMA, because it favors the athlete. Jiu-Jitsu, what it was designed by the great Gracie family back in the day with Elio and Carlos Gracie, it was to have a weaker guy control a stronger guy, but that was designed with a kimono on a Jiu-Jitsu gi. Now, without the gi, it's different. In the MMA, you have a trained athlete on top of you. I'm not saying that Jiu-Jitsu doesn't work, it's just not as dominant as it used to be, because there's other factors going on, and everyone knows jiu-jitsu now, too. So the two bigger skills.
Yeah, it just seems to me, if you've got a great striking game, as long as you can sprawl out of the takedowns and defend the jiu-jitsu, if it comes to that, you're just pretty much unstoppable if you've perfected your striking in MMA these days.
Definitely.
And speaking of striking, do you have a favorite move or a punch or anything like that you teach your guys?
No, I mean, I just teach a lot of good fundamentals, and I kind of let the guys develop their style. And there's always the fundamental strikes that are going to weigh in constantly. I mean, leg kicks are nice, you know, obviously your jab, your cross, you know, all the, you know, the things that everyone's doing. I just, you know, everyone has a different body style, strengths, weaknesses, and they just try and build their game around what works for them.
I kind of think that the leg kicks are underrated. Guys should throw a lot more of them, and sometimes they don't. But the case in point is Nate Marquardt's last fight. I'm drawing a blank who he fought in Strikeforce.
Tariq Saffredine.
Yeah, I didn't even actually see it, but I was watching it on a computer and I had a loose connection, so it was kind of coming in and out, but I could hear the announcer talking about all the leg kicks, how bad Marquardt's knee or leg looked after getting kicked so many times. But the other thing is it's your balance. I mean, it's your balanced leg, your lead leg. If you're constantly kicking that as an opponent, you know, the guy is not going to be able to throw a punch as well. So I think guys...
Down in our sport, it's one of those things that slips through the cracks. You have to train so many things constantly that for people to get good at everything, and you have to be able to expose them that night.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have any favorite fighters out there that are not on your team that you like to watch or that you have to watch anytime they're in action?
You know, I love some friends, and I think he's a class act. George St. Pierre, as well. I think that Anderson Silva is a pleasure to watch. He's always fun. You know, even though we're gonna fight him, I think all those guys, the guy I want to tune in to. I like watching Frankie after a fight. He's the Arturo Gatti who I keep up all of our sport. I think he's there's a guy with no his heart, man. He brings it every time. He really brings it every time he jumps in the cage. And the other guy who wore on me recently was DJ. I love this fight in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. All right. Trying to think of anything else I haven't asked yet. We covered a lot of stuff. What's your ultimate goal with the coaching? Where would you like to take it?
I want champions, man. I want to help all my guys reach their goals. You know, I want all the guys to. Reach the pinnacle, you know. So that's what's all about for me. You know, and help these guys get to where they need to go and want to be. To close to Stevenson and Anthony Pettis. You know, it's both have huge goals of doing big things in our sport. You know, right now. They both said I'm being the greatest of all time in their weight classes. Obviously, that's the top goal. Well, when Ali said he was going to be the greatest, they also said that was a tough goal too. But he did it.
Yeah, it's an ever-changing sport too. What do you think about the evolution of the sport in general? How far it's come from the one-night tournament and the UFC that's sort of started it all to today, where it's you got competing leagues and not competing reality shows even. What do you think?
The evolution of since I really got serious about it. I was working with Stephen Bauer to 2007, and I watched fights from that era to now, and they don't even look the same. Amateur fighters on the show this weekend will look just as good as pros did 5 to 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The skill set is much higher.
It seems because a lot of these athletes are getting involved at a younger age and training in everything instead of coming in with just one discipline that they're really good at. It's made a huge difference.
Yeah, for sure. And again, there's better academies, better coaching, just better opportunities for everyone, which creates better support systems.
Definitely. All right. Well, is there anybody you want to thank or give a shout out to or say hello to out there in Radio Land?
Just want to thank obviously my family, all the people who are so supportive. They're wonderful coaches and on the team, and just the fans. If they're on Twitter. Duke group is at Twitter, or if they want to hit me up on Facebook, I have a fan page on there, or Rufus Sport fan page. I'm real active on there, you know, active with people. So definitely appreciate today's support.
All right. Well, I hope you don't get buried in this blizzard, and wish you the best of luck getting over this sickness. And I dealt with a bad flu that turned into a sinus infection myself, so I know what you're going through. It sucks.
Yeah, I hopefully shake it off, but I appreciate it. You guys have an awesome night, and hopefully come on soon.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
Out on you guys, and we're going to spin this into a magazine article, so I'm going to make you famous.
Oh, thank you very much.
All right, dude. Great talking to you, Duke.
All right, so there's Duke Rufus. Busy guy. Traveling the world to the point where it got him sick, so definitely probably not looking forward to all this snow he's going to get. I know that they're talking about 30 inches in Boston area here. I'm up in New Hampshire where there's going to be a little less, but it's not going to be good for my wood business, that's for sure. Anyway, we got to get back to UFC 156. We just mentioned Duke, just mentioned Frankie Edgar. And, you know, I see the point of all the critics now that were saying that maybe they shouldn't have given Edgar the title shot so fast in his first fight cutting down to that weight. Because now where does he go? I mean, is he just satisfied with being a journeyman or just fighting the other guys at that weight? Does he go back up to lightweight? It's just kind of puzzling that they would put him in that position if he lost that fight, but you really don't know who to put him up against next.
Of course, then I guess the counter argument to that is when you get the title shot, you got to take it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you can go both ways.
Aldo has probably dominated so many people. I mean, this is twice in a row now. They got to bring people from another division to face him now. It's going to be Pettis.
Yeah.
So. I think Pettis has a better shot, though. He's got a more dynamic striking game to compete with all.
Because it's that speed of Aldo is just at another level. Just that speed. Mm-hmm. So.
But he didn't look as good as I've seen him in the past. So, I mean, Edgar definitely frustrated him at certain points.
Well, Edgar, now let's face it, Edgar's a hard guy to look good against.
Right.
You know, I think sometimes, again, in boxing you see that there's just guys that maybe they're not the best, but for some reason they just... it's hard to look good against him.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about Nogueira's win over Rashad Evans. That was a unanimous decision, as well as the Aldo win. Where do you go next for either of those guys? I mean, it's not the type of fight that would guarantee anyone a title shot if they won. I mean, either if it went either way. But, Rashad's he's got a solid record. I'm sure he'll be back. I hope he learns from it. And Nogueira's been around forever. He'll be around till he wants to leave, I think. So I don't think they'll be able to or they'll have any trouble finding opponents for him. We talked briefly about Demian Maia versus John Fitch. John Fitch has never been submitted. Is that what they kept talking about that in the fight? But he came close. I mean, Maia was trying to put that rear naked choke on through that whole fight, but it was amazing how he kept him in that body lock almost throughout the whole contest. And he definitely earned the unanimous decision there, even though a lot of people were booing about the fight being on the ground half the time. But Fitch did not look good. Speaking of trying to figure out how to change your game, he's going to have to work on some jiu-jitsu. Now to defend the body lock, for sure. We had Joseph Benavidez beat Ian McCall by unanimous decision. McCall, as we've seen from his two fights with Demetrius Johnson, he hasn't really been able to put together a dynamic fight in his last few fights, so... I don't know if he's on the borderline of being tossed out of the UFC, but he's been criticizing himself since this fight, from what I've read. So that should tell you something. Then we had Evan Dunham won a split decision. decision over Gleason Tebow. That was a three-round fight there. And probably the fight of the night, from my perspective, was the newcomer, Tyron Woodley, knocking out, other than the Silva fight, I think this was the fight of the night. If it wasn't for Silva's knockout, this one probably would have got KO of the night, too. But, Jay Heron.
Yeah. Woo! Wow!
It was one of those knockouts that reminded me of when it happens in football, when somebody it was Anquan Boldin that knocked out one time after a Cotton pass in the end zone, and he got hit so hard in the helmet-to-helmet contact before they made all those rules to forbid it and penalize it, and his legs just went totally numb. His hands just kind of went straight out to the side, and it's one of those type of knockouts. It's stunning.
Yeah, I mean, he made a statement with exclamation marks behind it. Boy, that, because Jay Heron is, you know, one of those guys. He's been around forever, top-notch guy, quality guy, and I don't think he's lost a lot. So I just think that was a Woodley. I mean, he's going to be a load.
And we had a really interesting fight between Bobby Green and Jacob Volkman. Volkman's been the controversy hound for his statements about Barack Obama. And they had the Secret Service after him after one fight for the stuff he was saying. But this time he came out dominant and then ended up getting his tables turned on him. And Bobby Green just kind of... sort of did the same thing as Bigfoot Silva, except his rope-a-dope was with the jiu-jitsu. He came back and got the rear naked choke on Goldman. That was one of the most enjoyable fights to watch. I thought it was pretty good deal. I saw a little bit of this one. The next one is Isaac Valley Flag versus Eve Edwards. I actually had never heard of Valley Flag until this fight. And Eve Edwards has been around forever. He's got one of those unbelievable MMA records. He's had so many fights, I think over 60 fights. So Valley Flag coming in and split decisioning Edwards. That was a pretty bold statement that he made. We had Dustin Kimura versus Chico Camus.
I wanted to talk to Duke about that one. Yeah, because Chico is Duke's guy, I believe.
Mm-hmm. So that was the one, yeah. Because I remember them talking about what Duke said to one of the fighters in the break, and I just forgot which fight that was, but. Mm-hmm. That was kind of a back and forth fight. It was sort of competitive until the rear naked choke ended it.
Well, what I wanted to ask Duke, it seemed like Chico had the edge on the feet, and then they go to the ground, and it seems like Kimura had the name like that, huh?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's like a Joe Armbar, you know. Geez, but
yeah.
You know, I thought that on the feet Chico was giving him angles. He had him confused a bit. I mean, not that it was one-sided, but I really feel that was his edge. And for the life of me, I can't understand why he kept going for the takedown. I mean, every time he'd get down there, he'd get in trouble, and just barely in the second round, he just barely survived a few of those submission attempts. And yet on the feet, he was doing so much better. And I was, you know, I wanted to ask Duke if Chico had just got off the game plan and wasn't listening, or if that was the game plan, and if it was. Did they just completely misread Kimura, and why, you know, it seems like they could have adjusted going into the third round. I mean, I was yelling at the television here. It says, what are you doing? What are you taking him down for? But he'll live and learn.
All right. Well, that's about does it for the 156 card there. Of course, we got a couple other events coming up this month, but we're going to hold off on talking about them right now. We had so much other stuff to cover. That's not really in my notes here, but kind of a funny thing that happened this last night. I don't know if you guys saw, but Mike Tyson was on Special Victims Unit. Did you hear about that?
I heard he was on. I didn't get a chance to watch him. The day block out his tattoo on there?
I don't know, but I just saw clips of it on CNN. And I guess the women's rights groups were up in arms, the victims' rights. They had some lady on there talking about how it was appalling for somebody who'd been accused of rape to be on a show that rape victims are, it's one of their favorite shows. They can relate to it. And he's playing somebody who had been abused, so I guess that really put them over the edge. And then somebody came on, and they were just like, well, he's not even a really good actor. And so somebody else
said, he did a good job in those Night Neighbor movies.
Somebody else said, well, he's more actor than boxer now, so you shouldn't really say
that. Yeah. Well, I mean, here's my take. I didn't get to see the show. I would watch it. I was doing something else. With regards to the 20 years ago people, he's been out for, Jesus Christ, almost 18 years now. So that's
it'd be one thing if it was like O.J. and he got acquitted. And everybody knew he really did it, But he served time.
Exactly. He served time. I mean, I'm not saying he came out and was a Boy Scout.
Right.
But he served his time. And come on, let's admit, it was a dubious rape conviction. I still, to this day, doubt. I think, she did it more for publicity than anything, and more for money. But, okay, let's put it aside. Let's put that aside. 20 years ago. And second of all, he can't make a living. You got other guys. Last week's Super Bowl, you have Ray Lewis in there, and, he was acquitted of a murder 12 years ago. And, if I'm not mistaken, he never missed even a game because of it.
Yeah, and there was barely much coverage of that, even leading right up to the Super Bowl. They had maybe one interview I saw on TV with the victim's family, and they were really quick about that even, and just talking about his redemption mostly in the piece that I saw.
So, and then you had a guy I know Michael Vick still gets, a lot of bad publicity, for his dogfighting ring 5 years ago, but he's another guy. He served his time. I'm hoping Eagles let him go and not know of the thing with the dog fighting is because I don't think he's a good quarterback. I think the team needs to move forward. There's a fine line with anything. It's hard when you get these, a lot of times like a guy will come out of prison and, anytime a guy, anytime you fill out a resume or a job application, have you been convicted of a crime? Yes. Once you click yes, your resume is pretty much going in the garbage. Let's be completely honest here.
I was watching Dog the Bounty Hunter the other day, and I guess when he was applying for jobs after he got out of jail, whenever he came to that question, he would write, "We'll discuss."
Yeah, right.
His first job, he just explained that he was taking my time, and I'm better off for it.
Yeah, basically, it's hard to say because Mike Tyson is still, a celebrity. I know he makes a decent amount of money from the hangings, and I know he's got some royalties with World Wrestling Entertainment, and he uses listen to one video game and all that. But if the guy is making money, then he's making an honest living, and if he's not doing anything violent, all the well put, because it keeps him out of trouble and it keeps him out of. Let me figure out a way to make money and, getting in something illegal.
No. Another news in the boxing world from the retired fighter circles. We've got some conflicting reports about Muhammad Ali's health. His brother has said it could be any day now that he dies or any month. But the rest of his closer family, I guess, is trying to say that he's fine. Word that he stopped talking. And then his daughter said that, no, I talked to him on the phone this morning, and they put out a picture of him watching all. So
he's wearing a Reagan shirt.
Yeah.
Honestly, from
I bet you Tom will tell us where we left off when we get him back on. But that sucks. I don't even know how long I was talking to nobody. Except you. I figured, you know, maybe Tom would have something to say about the reality series that we were talking about a little earlier. Just, he could not. Alright, so we're back. Sorry about that, folks. A phone call here. Something happened. Blog Talk Radio hung up on us without telling us. We're going to try to get Tom back on, and then we'll try to fill in and pay no mind to the 90-second lady. Because as long as they don't hang up on us again, we have more time. Maybe we'll get Tom to call in here. Anyway, I'm pretty sure we did not get to the last story, so I'm just going to read the article over again. Boxer Omar Henry craved the spotlight and hoped one day to become the undisputed super welterweight champion. Sadly, though, Henry only became a star in death when he died at 25 Friday in a Chicago hospital following his short fight with gallbladder cancer. Henry was 12-0-1, and he was supposed to fight on Showtime on November 16th, but he didn't feel well a few days before the fight, went to see his doctor, and was diagnosed with stage 4 gallbladder cancer. He posted a series of comments on Facebook fan page in which he pleaded for prayers and support. Perhaps the most tragic was his January 9th post when he said he hoped to live to celebrate his 26th birthday on February 8th, which is tomorrow. Sadly, he fell a week short of that goal. I got exactly less than a month. This is from a Facebook post. I got exactly less than 1 month left until my 26th birthday, February 8th. Hopefully I live to see it.